Hi, everyone, and welcome to Device Week, a podcast from MedTech Insight. I'm Sean Schmidt, Deputy Editor. I'm joined today by Senior Reporters Sue Darcy and Danielle Farouk, Editor-in-Chief Dave Fillmore, and Deputy Editor Reed Miller. As usual, we'll discuss some key issues that we're covering impacting the device and diagnostics sector. The big topic we'll talk about today is the 21st Century Cures Act. There's been 2 years of discussion on the best ways to streamline the device and drug regulatory approval process at FDA, and to provide more research funds to NIH. But it appears now that Congress has reached agreement on a 21st Century Cures package. Sue, Dave, and Danny have been looking at various aspects of this broad-based package. Sue, let's start with you. Where do things stand with this legislation?
Thanks, Sean. The House overwhelmingly passed the Medical Innovation and Research Bill on a 392-26 vote November 30th. And the Senate is expected to approve the same measure early next week. The Obama administration is also behind it, largely because it contains over $4.8 billion in funding authorizations for medical research programs the president has endorsed, the Precision Medicine Initiative and the Cancer Moonshot programs, for example. Mr. Obama is expected to sign the law shortly after Senate passage.
Well, so things seem to be moving fast. What are some of the specific provisions in the bill that device companies should be keyed into?
I'll jump in there first, Sean. This is Dave. The device industry has definitely been involved in helping to craft some of the FDA device provisions in the bill, and it's been a major cheerleader for the legislation ever since it got off the ground. It aligns with the industry's goals to streamline the process for reaching the market with new or modified products. So a particular provision that I would note is the for breakthrough devices. It's going to be a new statutory accelerated development pathway for products that address unmet needs. FDA is already doing something like this on its own. It's popular 2015 launch expedited access pathway. But the bill would kind of expand that program in a few subtle ways. And in particular, would open it up to devices that can go through the 510K process. And not just PMAs and de novos, which is a restriction for the expedited program that FDA currently does. So how that all is going to play out will be interesting to see.
Right, Dave. And there's a bunch of other provisions of note to industry as well, such as expansion of the humanitarian device exemption program, one to streamline FDA's ability to recognize international and national consensus standards for devices, and another reducing FDA's jurisdiction over medical software, to name a few.
And Danny, you looked into two of those in particular on medical software and standards. Tell me about those.
Thanks, Sean. Yes, I took a deeper dive into some provisions in the bill that would directly affect device manufacturers. A major issue of contention between FDA and industry has been the agency's lack of clarification on clinical decision support software, or CDS software. Now, we've written quite a bit about the issue in the past, and there seemed to be some movement in recent months where FDA and industry lobbyists had planned to discuss the matter. However, it seems like House lawmakers have decided to circumvent all that by introducing language into the Cures Bill specifically stating FDA is not allowed to regulate medical software like CDS software unless they can provide a compelling rationale.
Right, and it's not just CDS, but there are five specific software categories that the bill explicitly bars the agency from regulating, right? There's another provision that you wrote about that could greatly affect 510K sponsors. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, one of the provisions of the Cures Bill specifically states that anyone can submit a national or international standard to the FDA to be recognized by the agency. Basically, what that means is the agency would have 60 days to either say it recognizes a standard or part of a standard, or again, provide a compelling reason why it decided against doing so. The experts I talked to say this will specifically benefit 510K sponsors because it would greatly reduce their administrative costs and shorten review times. However, at least initially, it is likely to put a lot more burden on FDA's resources, and some are concerned there aren't enough resources in the bill allocated to the agency to fulfill its mandate.
Okay, so the House passed the bill, and words of support have come from the Senate and the White House. Sue, has there been any opposition to this measure getting attention?
Yes. Many Democrats are concerned that while the legislation includes funding for both NIH and FDA to cover all the new initiatives, the bill does not lock that money in as mandatory, so it will need to be authorized annually. Most Democrats in the House, nonetheless, came around to supporting the overall package, and it seems like it'll be a similar picture in the Senate, but holdouts remain. One was key House Appropriations Committee member, Representative Rosa DeLauro, who rose in opposition to the bill prior to the House vote. In addition to the funding issue, she said the bill would actually weaken standards for devices, and she cited the recent recall of the St. Jude Medical defibrillator batteries after a series of adverse events as an example of the too loose regulatory controls she said already exists at FDA. Further, Public Citizen issued a similar statement saying that the bill's device and drug provisions would only serve to weaken standards at the agency, making it too easy for unsafe and ineffective medical products to come to market.
Right. And there's been some push, Sue, on that, albeit, you know, with little traction to actually add more device safety provisions into the bill. That's obviously not happening. Really, as it is, there's only one, I would say, sort of minor, nothing drastic section responding to infection outbreaks tied to duodenoscopes in recent years. And on the funding issue, as you say, that's a key one. And Danny's point about some people saying, you know, there's not may not be enough money, even with the non-mandatory money there is, you know, something we're going to have to watch for. But regardless of all of that, it seems the Cures Bill is on a glide path to enactment, with Senate taking it up this coming week, December 5th. They're going to start there. And it's likely going to be one of the last bills that will go through the Obama White House.
Well, with that, let's move our focus to the next White House occupant. The big healthcare news this week from the Trump transition team was the selection of intended nominees to serve as Secretary of HHS and head of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The president-elect has nominated Georgia Republican Representative Tom Price to lead Health and Human Services. He's an orthopedic surgeon who has based his congressional career on opposition of the Affordable Care Act. Trump is also backing Seema Varma, a Medicaid reformer, to lead CMS. So what are some of the key elements of Price's activities in Congress that device firms might want to be aware of?
Well, as you said, Sean, he has been a major proponent of dismantling Obamacare and has sponsored bills with replacement plans that rely more on traditional private insurance-driven options. So if there was any doubt that the Trump administration will push aggressively to get rid of Obamacare, this appointment seems to remove it. Of note for device companies, Price has also aggressively opposed and has introduced bills to tear down new payment and delivery models developed by CMS's Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation to target device procedures. Specifically, Price wants to abolish episode of care bundled payment projects for hip and knee replacement surgeries and for cardiac procedures. Price has also moved legislation forward that would reverse some of the reimbursement cuts and impact from the Medicare Durable Medical Equipment Competitive Bidding Program, which equipment suppliers have vigorously opposed.
What about the pick for CMS? Dave, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, sure. Seema Varma at CMS would do nothing, I don't think, to detract from the plans by the Trump team to dismantle Obamacare and the delivery reforms that Sue mentioned. She does not have a clear record on issues of specific targeted interest to the device space, but she's known specifically, as you mentioned, as a Medicaid expert and has very close ties to Vice President-elect Mike Pence. Varma was the point person for Indiana's rollout of an Obamacare-directed Medicaid expansion in the state during Pence's tenure as governor and his predecessor's tenure as well. Particularly, she put a focus on linking conservative favored policies with Medicaid, such as health savings accounts and waivers.
What are the prospects for confirmation of these nominees?
The outlook of approval for both Price and Varma by Republican-led Senate committees is generally favorable, I would say for sure. Both nominees, though, should expect some fierce grilling by Democrats on both the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee and the Senate Finance Committee, which are both charged with reviewing the nominations.
Thanks, Dave. Now let's turn our focus to Reed. You covered a major medtech acquisition earlier this week as Edwards bought Valtech for nearly $700 million. Can you tell us more about that?
So Edwards Life Sciences, which of course is the leader right now in transcatheter valves, bought a company called Valtech, which makes a device that is not a valve, but it is a transcatheter valve repair device. Specifically, it is used to fix the tricuspid valve or the mitral valve with a basically a ring. Now, there's already surgical versions of this, and so this would just be a transcatheter version of the same thing, which would obviously, you know, meet the demand for a lot of people who either can't have surgery or would rather have less invasive surgery. Now, they only paid $340 million in stock and up to $350 million in milestones. So that makes it, like you said, that makes it $690 million. Now, that's an interesting figure because just a year ago, Heartware tried to buy Valtech for $900 million and didn't make the deal go through because their own investors nixed it, saying that that's not what Heartware should be focused on. The Heartware should stay focused on their VADs, and that trying to get into this sort of valve-related thing that only had sort of a tangential relationship to their heart failure business was not a good idea. And then not long after that happened, of course, Heartware was bought out by Medtronic. So Edwards apparently got a bargain to buy this company, and it clearly is a much better fit with Edwards than it would have been with Heartware, since Edwards is already, like I said, the valve leader, both in surgical and in transcatheter.
And there was a big annual meeting of radiologists in Chicago this week that created some news in the advanced imaging field. Tell us about that too.
Right. So every year, the RSNA has their big meeting. That's a radiological society in North America, has their big meeting always in Chicago. And once again, it was in Chicago, November 27th through December 2nd. A lot of new software, mostly that, you know, either helps radiology practices organize themselves, be more efficient, manage the images, be able to call up images and compare one to the other, that sort of thing. There were a lot of different companies developing that sort of thing. There were a couple of sort of interesting technological developments. In particular, GE introduced something called Freelium, which is a technology to make magnets in a magnetic resonance imaging system work without nearly as much liquid helium as current MRI machines require. And that's important because helium, particularly liquid helium, is actually very rare, and we're running out of it as a planet. And yet it requires about 2,000 liters of liquid helium to make a magnet cold enough to work in a MRI machine. So GE says that their system can work with about 1% as much liquid helium, and it would be more ecologically friendly, and it would just be easier to install. Now, they don't have a device on the market yet that fits this description, but there's potential for that to radically change how MRI machines work if the technology turns out to be what GE says it is. And although most of the equipment at RSNA is very large and the presentation is in an enormous trade show hall with, you know, very large company booths, one of the more interesting technologies that was presented was actually a technology designed to be smaller. So this was Samsung's GM85 mobile digital x-ray system, which has wheels and it can move around the hospital. And they sort of promoted it like a new car. They talked about it offering the ultimate driving experience for radiologists and technicians. And so it's lighter, it's smaller than existing systems. It's not so light that you can just, you know, push it around. It still has its own sort of driving system that allows, you know, physicians or anybody working in the hospital to move it around. That way, you know, hospitals won't have to have more than one of these machines in different places. So that was one of the other technologies there. But you can read about a whole bunch of others this week in our wrap-up of RSNA.
Thanks for that, Reed. Listeners can read about everything we just spoke about today and much more at medtechinsight.com. You can follow us on Twitter at medtech_insight. For now, thanks for listening.